Welcome to Under Lock and Key, news and commentary about prisons from the Revolutionary Anti-Imperialist League and the Maoist Internationalist Movement.
Leonard Peltier denied clemency. This story and more.
The U.S. incarcerates a greater percentage of its population than any other country, sending more black men to prison than college. The purpose of this program is to educate about and inspire activism against the American lockdown.
Leonard Peltier denied clemency. It turns out that money does indeed buy political favors. Ex-President Clinton pardoned hundreds of people in a last-minute rush before he turned over the keys to the White House to George W. Bush. Supporters of American Indian Movement activist Leonard Peltier had been working for almost 2 years on petitioning Clinton for clemency. Clinton said he would review the case carefully, but revolutionary activists were skeptical. In the end, Bill knew it was too politically risky for him and now Senator Hillary. FBI agents had protested against amnesty for Peltier in the weeks before Clinton stepped down. Leonard Peltier was convicted of killing two FBI agents on June 26, 1975, despite the lack of eyewitness testimony and contradictions in the prosecution's case. There were numerous problems with this trial. Important witnesses against Peltier later admitted that they lied, that the prosecution withheld ballistics information which would have exonerated Peltier, the defense was prohibited from discussing the FBI's practice of using false affidavits and of intimidating witnesses, and so on. Peltier was convicted in a sham trial because the United States government needed a scapegoat, and he was a participant in a militant movement for self-determination for First Nation peoples. Clinton's pardons were par for the corrupt course. He pardoned Susan McDougal of the Whitewater scam and his own brother Roger Clinton. Among the surprises was Mark Rich, a billionaire who bilked the American government out of $48 million in taxes and spent 17 years in exile in Switzerland rather than face a trial and a possible prison term in the United States. Rich's ex-wife gave a lot of money to Hillary's Senate campaign and begged Clinton to let her ex-husband come home. If we Peltier supporters had hundreds of thousands of dollars to bribe Clinton, perhaps he would be coming home by now. But we didn't. All we had was the truth and a commitment to help the oppressed. Evidently, these don't count for much within the American bourgeoisie, whose courts have refused to even consider the possibility of reasonable doubt in this case. Clinton's decision reaffirms the need for a long-term, broad strategy, even in legal battles which can be won under capitalism. If Clinton had given Peltier amnesty, for example, it would not have been because of a handful of lawyers. Rather, it would have been as the result of the political pressure of the masses, aroused and organized by activist groups like the Leonard Peltier Defense Committee and the Maoist Internationalist Movement. Furthermore, we are bound to suffer some defeats, but even these defeats give us the opportunity for future victories. We can use them to further expose the corruption of the American imperialist government. As Leonard Peltier said himself in the 30th of January statement to his supporters, quote, "We can see who was granted clemency and why. The big donors to the president's campaign were able to buy justice. That's something that we couldn't afford. Meanwhile, many political prisoners continue to languish unjustly, proof that this nation's talk about reconciliation is nothing but empty rhetoric." Mamia Abu-Jamal is a former Black Panther on death row. He was framed for the righteous killing of a police officer engaged in an act of police brutality. He was sentenced to death in 1982 after a bogus trial. His appeals are now in the much quicker federal courts, and an execution could happen very soon. Prior to his arrest, Mamia was a radio journalist who exposed police brutality. From within the walls, through books, articles, and radio commentaries, Mamia continues to be an outspoken leader of the oppressed. With Mamia's access to the media limited, we recorded one of his essays to bring it to a wider audience. See and hear for yourself the real reason why the state of Pennsylvania wants to kill Mamia Abu-Jamal.
The Snitch Factor by Mamia Abu-Jamal. Each generation must, out of relative obscurity, discover its mission, fulfill it, or betray it. Franz Fanon, The Wretched of the Earth. In the history of every oppressed people, there was one figure who earned the hatred and enmity of that community. This was always the snitch. Throughout the long, tortured centuries of oppression against blacks in America, a special contempt was reserved for those who dared snitch against the endangered slave community. people who made their livings by selling out their own people, sending information to dreaded slave catchers in the South, who used the infamous Fugitive Slave Act to track and re-enslave those who dared escape their fiendish clutches. In 1800, a slave named Gabriel Prosser, his wife and his brothers, organized a far-reaching rebellion that gathered some 1,000 rebels who were bent on waging an armed assault on Richmond, Virginia. The plot was betrayed by two snitches, Tom and Pharaoh, and the resultant revolt ended in failure. At least 35 rebels were hanged. The brilliant Denmark Vesey's revolt in Charleston, South Carolina, was spoiled by one snitch. 131 conspirators were arrested, and 37 of them, including Vesey, were hanged. In the summer of 1740, another major conspiracy was wiped out around the city of Charleston, South Carolina. A slave trader told all that he knew to the slaveholders a full day in advance of the revolt, and when nearly 200 rebellious slaves gathered together in defiance, they were beaten and recaptured. Half escaped. At least 50 of the Africans were caught and hanged in batches of 10 a day, the better to intimidate the other Negroes. The snitch, Peter, was rewarded with a suit of clothes, hat, shoes, and stockings, and 20 pence in cash. In our own era, the late 1960s and 1970s, saw members of the Black Panther Party, like the revered Fred Hampton and Captain Mark Clark, slain in their apartment building in Chicago by killer cops who were helped by an informer, a snitch, William O'Neill, who provided floor plans, sleeping places, and security details of the home. He was well placed for that dastardly mission, as he was security lieutenant for the chapter. He served Fred and other key Panthers soft drinks reportedly laced by secobarbital, making them unable to respond to the deadly raid in the night. He dearly received a bonus of perhaps $300, today's equivalent of 30 pieces of silver, it seems. In the age of the so-called drug war, the snitch has truly come of age. In popular culture, at least in the version projected on the idiot box, snitching has been portrayed as hip, as in, as an okay thing to do. From the pimp-dressing huggy bear of Starsky and Hutch infamy to the latest personification, they have made snitching virtually acceptable. Young generations of African Americans, unmindful of their legacy of resistance against the slavery system, don't understand that snitching is not cool. In Jewish law, halakha, there were few crimes one could commit against their community that were worse than snitching. Scholar Adin Steinsaltz noted that anyone bearing tales against members to the alien authorities places himself outside of the law by his action, and members of the community are permitted and even encouraged to kill him. They are a scourge, even now, that are a threat to our freedom. By Mumia Abu-Jamal.
No free speech in prison. Upon receiving your MIM notes, I found them to be very informative and educational to young comrades who are learning of the struggle. I found well-printed facts that the puppet media fails to inform its dumbfounded audience. MIM notes is truly a publication that responds to the cries from the invisible world of lost souls.
On any given day in America, more than 2 million people in prisons and jails spend their days subjected to the most rigorous censorship and are denied the fundamental rights protected everywhere else by the freedom of speech. They are denied reading material deemed objectionable and are punished for possessing radical views, and then they are rewarded for renouncing them. No matter whether the winds of the United States Supreme Court blow left or right, prisoners are most often utterly abandoned by the federal courts. Prison officials have not hesitated to use their position of total control over every aspect of a prisoner's life to punish an inmate for expressing unpopular views. And the federal courts show unbecoming credulity when administrators dutifully insist their goals were proper. For example, in Nickens v. White, prison officials at a medium security institution placed an inmate in solitary confinement and then transferred him to a maximum facility when he refused to take his name off a petition. The petition, signed by about 200 prisoners, was directed to a state official and protested prison conditions. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the Eighth Circuit upheld both the policy against petitions as well as its peculiar enforcement. The court found no First Amendment problem in punishing a prisoner for refusing to renounce his prior speech. If I am not mistaken, the First Amendment states that people have the right to petition the government for a redress of grievances. How can we depend on these unjust courts that upon hearing a case from a prisoner, it mysteriously gets a case of constitutional amnesia? The First Amendment protection of the quest for political and social truth is only discoverable when people are free to think as they please and speak what they think. Free speech rights are also cherished as a vacation against tyranny and an abuse of government power. Within a prison, the hand of government is far heavier and more frequently involved. What the government and its prisoncrats fail to realize is that by punishing a revolutionary comrade for speech does not discourage the speech, it only drives it underground and encourages more unity among the struggle. Remember, comrades, the most dangerous man on earth is one who has knowledge. He becomes notorious once he begins to use it. This is a letter from a New Jersey prisoner. Censorship in New York prisons. I finally received my first issues of MemNotes. It was the October issues, or more accurately, I should say I received what was left of them. I personally met with the chairperson of the Media Review Committee. I agreed to have 2 pages removed from each paper, which he said were a bit too radical. After waiting nearly 2 months, I received 1 page from the October 1 issue, all in Spanish, and 2 pages from the October 15th issue. This coward censored 20 pages in all. It's evident that literature of this nature, exposing the government for what it is not wanted in the hands of prisoners. I recently received a notice from this coward again, stating that my November 1st issue of MemNotes is being held for the Media Review Committee. This was a report from a New York prisoner, January 2001. There is no education in American prisons. I've been in prison 4 years now, and I've been denied an education. I've had jobs unloading tractor trailers, cutting grass, and doing mail pickup, each paid $8.25 every 2 weeks for 10 months. I was not put in a GED class during this time, but I continue to receive this low wage due to not having a diploma. This was a letter from a New York prisoner. When this letter was printed in MemNotes, the Maoist Internationalist Movement added, "Until the prison system is run in the interests of the oppressed under a proletarian dictatorship, we cannot trust that prisoners will be provided with adequate education. However, it is possible to wage battles around the need for access to education within prison. It is good that your help to expose the lack of education in prisons for under lock and key, but we suggest that prisoners in situations like the above take it a step further. Gather the prisoncrat policies regarding education in your prison, and get copies of the state regulations as well. The policy is to guarantee access to GED classes, help us publicize the prisons that don't stick to their own rules. If such basic education is not guaranteed, either in your facility or in the state, use this as a launching point to develop the struggle to gain access to basic education. MIM can provide you with some resources regarding struggles to gain access to basic education in prisons, and we can help you develop tactics for a successful campaign for access to education in prisons. One part of building public opposition to the American lockdown is to expose America's unwillingness to help prisoners educate themselves. That said, even after gaining access to educational programs sponsored by the United States, we do not conclude that this means prisoners have adequate education. American education is specifically geared towards bolstering support for imperialism and the dictatorship of the bourgeoisie. We encourage prisoners to form revolutionary study groups to learn various subjects from the perspective of the international proletariat. In total, we encourage prisoners to get as much out of the prison system as possible while studying with MIM for revolutionary foundations.
This has been Under Lock and Key, a revolutionary anti-imperialist league and Maoist internationalist movement program about prisons. For more information, contact RAIL, P.O. Box 712, Amherst, Massachusetts, 01004, or email radio@mim.org.